Hi, I'm Mike Sainsbury, and this ASI cast is all about on-demand media, specifically streaming audio. Triton Digital may be an unfamiliar name to many outside of the US, although the company is doing business in 40 different countries. Richard Marks talks to John Rosso, Triton's President of Market Development, of the services the company offers to the streaming audio market. What impact is the data Triton provides to broadcasters having on the way they shape their content? They also discuss why it is that podcasts are especially popular in the States, and what are the main things keeping US radio executives awake at night.
Well, welcome to the podcast, John. Now, Triton may be a new name to some of our delegates at ASI, I think because up to now your activities have been mainly focused in the US. How would you describe the way Triton works with clients?
Well, first, Richard, thanks very much for the invitation both to participate in the ASI conference and also to be on your podcast today. To answer your question, you're right. Triton is probably a new name to some of the delegates at ASI, as most of our activities are in the U.S. today. Most of our clients are in the U.S., but we actually are doing business today in 40 different countries and operating 8 offices in 5 different countries around the world. So we've got an international presence that is actually growing quite rapidly. The services that we provide to those clients, both in the U.S. and internationally, include a number of different services, mostly for online audio publishers. Those would include website and audio content management systems, points-based reward system for broadcast radio, a loyalty program, online audio advertising technology, including ad serving and programmatic audio exchange. And then the thing that we are actually most well known for, which is our streaming audience measurement service called Webcast Metrics, and that service is most well known for the monthly rankers of streaming audio publishers that we put out each month.
Mm. I'd like to take a kind of a deeper dive into a few aspects of what you do, although I do understand they're interconnected to a certain degree. But picking up on the audience measurement tool, which is obviously fairly central to what ASI is about, without preempting too much what you'll be speaking about in Nice, what impact is it having on how broadcasters shape their content, the fact that they are getting this this feedback via a dashboard, you know, in real time or near real time? How is it changing the way that they're scheduling and programming radio per se?
Sure. So you're right in that the data is available in near real time, within just a few minutes of a piece of content being streamed. The programming folks can check on their console and see the impact on listening, and it's fascinating to watch the spikes in consumption happen. You know, we're not just measuring the audience, we also are a content distribution network, so we also see those spikes impacting our network. So it's interesting to correlate those two things to major events that are happening. A couple of interesting events over the last few years that really have shown up as spikes in our measurement. The Boston bombing really caused an incredible increase in listening in the Boston market and elsewhere. And then the thing that recently eclipsed that nationally was the listening to streaming audio services when former FBI head James Comey testified back over the summer. So it is interesting that you can see these kinds of spikes happening in near real time. And it doesn't have to be a big, you know, a national event in order for it to be relevant. If you're a local radio station and you want to see how a particular interview or piece of content performed in the morning show today, you can go and look at that, and you can quite easily compare it to prior days and prior weeks and make programming decisions based on that. No one's exactly mapped streaming listening behavior to over-the-air listening behavior, but I think we can assume that they should move together, and there should be a very high degree of correlation between streaming and over-the-air listening.
It's interesting. In a recent interview we did with the radio analyst James Cridland, he was worried that the move to PPM data in the States, in other words, from diaries averaged over a month or a quarter, mm-hmm. to overnights, he claimed it had actually made the US industry more conservative because people were, I think in Israel, panicking too early if they saw those spikes and reacting and, you know, changing formats and getting rid of DJs, in his view, too soon. It was actually having a creative impact on the industry. How do you find people are using your data? Are you working with them in terms of how they take decisions, or is it mainly them observing at the moment and getting to know the data?
I think it's mostly them observing still at this point, although when looking at the number of people that stream a typical radio station and comparing that number to the number of people meters that might be in a market, streaming does represent a considerably larger sample. And again, it does come in real time, and it is second by second detail as to the actual listening sessions. So, you can use that, I think, with directional accuracy as to what's happening with the audiences. I think James is right that the move to people meter has definitely changed the way radio stations are programmed in the U.S. You could argue for or against that, but I also believe that the advertising community really was driving radio in that direction. And without some form of electronic measurement, radio would be critically disadvantaged versus other electronic media.
Well, you could also argue that if audience measurement data inhibits creative, that's an argument for not measuring anything, which would take us kind of back to square one.
We know that most people who listen to music radio, let's set aside talk for the moment. Let's just talk about music radio, which makes up the vast, vast majority of listening, at least in the United States. Most people who are listening to music radio are there to listen for the music. And often when something other than the music, whether it's an advertisement or DJ chatter or whatever else comes on, it's perceived as a negative. And if people meter shows that tune-outs occur whenever the music stops, the programmer will certainly endeavor to play more music. And we've seen that over time as stations have cut out all of the or much of the interstitial materials and really just focused on squeezing in as many songs per hour as they could. And while that may win the PPM ratings game, long term, it makes you wonder what differentiates broadcast radio from, a music service or a jukebox, if it's only music with commercials in between.
I remember being at an event probably over a decade ago when the UK radio stations were panicking about the advent of the iPod, and pointing out that the average person had, you know, more songs in their pocket than the average radio station's playlist for a week, and claiming that therefore they needed to go, as you say, to have more music per hour. But actually, arguably, speech is what differentiates.
Sure, radio. I agree with you.
You know, the community, the feeling of connectedness of the DJs. Related to that, I know podcasting is a big area of focus for you, and that does tend, certainly in the UK, to be skewed towards speech, not least for copyright issues. I know you've done some work with Edison Research, who spoke at our event last year about podcasting. Why do you think podcasts are especially popular in the US at the moment compared to other markets?
Well, you are right that podcasting is a big area of focus for us. It seems to be a big area of focus for just about everyone at this point. You can't go to a conference on the audio business without hearing a lot about podcasting. And even though the revenue related to podcasting is still relatively small, it's growing quite rapidly, and I think the mind share for podcasting is actually quite huge. The work that we've done with Edison Research on the Infinite Dial, I don't have the hard numbers in front of me, but it showed that something approaching 50% of Americans 12 plus were listening to podcasts, or had ever listened to podcasts, or were listening to podcasts monthly or so. And, it's a very well-known mass market consumer activity at this point, and I think the advertising is going to catch up over time. And it's been a big focus for Triton Digital, where we do hosting and advertising technology and analytics around podcasting for a number of the world's largest podcast producers. Why is I'm sorry.
Sorry, no, go ahead.
I was about to answer your specific question as to why it might. Sometimes it takes me a minute to get there, but I do generally get there. Why is podcasting sort of more of a thing in the U.S. than outside of the U.S.? I think there are a couple of reasons for that. First, I think, and none of this is scientifically determined on my part. These are things I believe to be true, but could be proven wrong. I think first, because of the high commercial loads on broadcast radio in the U.S., younger people are particularly incented to go and find other forms of audio entertainment where the commercial load's not quite so high, and they can get a lot of the same content in a downloadable form. They're not confused or frightened by the technology, so they're happy to go off and do that. And I think in other places where there are large public service broadcasters that don't have the high commercial loads that we have here, there's less of a reason to go seek out those on-demand versions. Another reason is content related, which is Serial, which is the podcast that sort of, you know, blew podcasting open here in the U.S. Probably had significantly higher relevance here in America than it did elsewhere, being a pretty interesting and uniquely American crime story. And then one technology reason that I believe it's true that you know, the U.S. is sort of overweight on iPhones relative to Android devices, in that we've sort of embraced iPhones at a higher percentage than much of the rest of the world. And, you know, the iPhone, the iOS software embraced podcasting pretty early on and put podcasting on the home screen of everyone who has an iPhone in their pocket. And if you're carrying around an Android device, it's not as easy. It's not just served up for you quite as easily as it has been on iPhones. And we know that iPhone consumption represents the vast, vast majority of podcast consumption out there.
I've seen other surveys, certainly in the UK, that have seemed to indicate that there is a media usage difference per se between iOS and Android, that iOS users just seem to consume more media, whether it's the amount of money they're spending on the phone, they want to justify it by using it, or whether, as you say, the Apple architecture makes it easier to consume that media. But
in streaming, certainly.
It's interesting.
Where iPhone sessions are typically quite a bit longer than Android sessions.
Interesting. I mean, the other area that you're heavily involved in is the whole area of advertising itself, in terms of working with clients, in terms of actually, yeah, inserting, replacing, and trading advertising. How does that relationship work with your clients? Is there an element of a sort of a sweetheart deal where you're giving them services in and helping them with their advertising in return? Is that a simplistic way of looking at it?
Well, I don't know that I would call it a sweetheart deal so much as that Triton works very, very consultatively with our clients. You know, we tend to work mostly for large enterprises, generally big national or multi-market publishers, you know, big broadcasting companies or music services. And when we're working with those large enterprises, we tend to get very deep into their strategies and work very closely and consultatively with them. So I wouldn't call them sweetheart deals so much as that we just get very, very close to our clients and help them at a very sort of deep and strategic level. You're right that we are quite involved in the advertising part of the streaming business. In fact, Triton, which is an amalgamation of quite a number of different companies that were acquired to form Triton, bought Endomedia, which is the company that sort of invented streaming ad replacement for the broadcasting industry here in the U.S. A long, long time ago. And we've now taken that to new heights. We were on our third generation of ad serving product, where we are working to insert ads for most of the major broadcasters here in America, many throughout the rest of the world. We've also built the first of its kind programmatic audio ad exchange, now in its fourth year of operation, and a supply side platform specifically built for audio that is helping our clients access new sources of revenue from digital media budgets executed through trading desks. So we're very, very proud of our work on the audio ad technology side of the business and the fact that we're able to help our clients generate new revenue every day.
At the ASI radio conference in Nice, we've actually got a paper from DAX, which you may have come across, which is launched by Global Radio in the UK. So it will be good to have a wider debate about the new forms of radio advertising, because clearly there's huge opportunities there, I think, in audio and not just radio. I know you work with Spotify and streaming services as well. So it's across the whole audio spectrum. Talking of the upcoming event, we've been obviously looking at the agenda and trying to get a good mix of the current topics. But from a US perspective, what would you say were the hot topics that are keeping US radio executives awake at night?
Well, I think it's the same topics that have kept US radio executives awake every night since the invention of the medium, which is audience and revenue. And really no different today than it's ever been before, just with, different set of challengers to each. I think the audience issue is one that is really challenging, in that even though U.S. radio reaches over 90% of the of Americans 12 plus every week, the number of hours of radio consumed by younger people is falling off, and there's a time spent listening problem as media fragments. Now, to broadcast radio's credit, it has not nearly suffered like television has and other electronic media, not including digital, in this fragmented marketplace. So radio's held its own and is just starting to see some fall off of the younger demographics in terms of time spent listening. So radio needs to figure that out and figure out how to re-engage with those folks and bring them back to the medium more times a day and for longer periods of time. And I believe radio's presence on mobile devices, radio's presence back in the home now with smart speakers like Alexa and Google Home, will definitely help to, if not reverse that trend, at least slow the decline down amongst the younger users of radio. The other big area of concern is always revenue. And interestingly, at least in the United States, only about 20% of the revenue to broadcast radio comes from large national advertisers executed through national orders. The other 80% is sort of local into local, local radio advertisers buying local radio stations. And that local radio revenue has been largely insulated from attack by the digital media firms out there. And so while I think national advertisers have been quicker to move to expressing some of their budgets digitally, local merchants haven't done that, and local advertisers haven't done that as rapidly. I think that's now starting to tip over with, Google and Facebook now becoming the largest local media in any market. I think radio's dominance of local electronic advertising is challenged a bit by digital for the first time, and then the industry will have to respond.
Absolutely. Obviously, we're big fans of audio on the podcast because that's the medium we work in, but you can't beat some actual data. And when we meet up in Nice in November, hopefully we'll be seeing some examples of what we've been talking about in your presentation. So thanks for making the time to speak to us today. We look forward to seeing you in Nice, and have a great rest of the day.
Thank you so much. A great pleasure speaking with you today. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Nice.
You can listen to other ASI Cast interviews by accessing the archive of recordings at asiconferences.com.